Jacqueline Olds is a psychiatrist and the author of The Lonely American, describing the epidemic of loneliness in American life. She has given TED Talks on the subject that are available online. This is Jacqueline Olds. I'm Duncan Gammy. You're listening to Dunk Tank. Okay, great. So I'm here with Dr. Jacqueline Olds. Thank you very much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
So I wanted to talk to you because you had written a book called The Lonely American, Drifting Apart in the 21st Century. First off, why this title? I mean, why focus particularly on American loneliness and why the 21st century? Is there something uniquely lonely about that class of people?
Well, when we were asked to write the book, that was thought through. Essentially, there had been something called the General Social Survey that had been, it's given every 18 to 20 years, and it had just been given when we were called, asked whether we might write this book. And it said that something like a quarter of the people who were asked the question, have you talked about anything of importance to anyone over the last 6 months, about 24.5% of the people said no. And even when they, you know, were asked, well, did you write anything? Because so many people communicate on text or email, they said no. And this was a huge change from the past when it was more like 9%. And similarly, when you asked people how many confidants they had, and this was just an American survey, they had formerly said in the last survey that they had an average of 3 people that they could talk to and really be themselves, and that went down to 2. So they essentially the number of confidants went down by a third, and the not speaking to anybody about anything important had gotten to be a much bigger percentage over the six-month period. So those were the kind of survey facts that made people think this is a new era, and there is a huge number of people experiencing loneliness in the country. And so they wondered if we might write a book explaining that, or essentially explaining our theories about that, since we, my husband and I, had been in psychiatric practice for 40-odd years apiece. And so they thought maybe we would have noticed the trend. And actually we had, because we'd written a book in 1996 called Overcoming Loneliness in Everyday Life. And that was a book back then where we talked about wanting to bring loneliness out of the closet. And by that we meant we didn't want people to feel so embarrassed and ashamed about feeling lonely, because it's a universal experience at times. And that so many of our patients were willing to essentially adopt or request all sorts of diagnoses, but not even mention that they felt horribly lonely for, you know, often many sessions. And we discovered it when it would have been much more helpful to talk about it from the get-go.
That's interesting that you say that people came in requesting diagnoses, but not even mentioning the core fact, excuse me, of loneliness.
Right.
Do you think that there's some debate that, you know, we overdiagnose and overprescribe? Do you think that many of the mental health issues that we see in America today can be attributed to this loneliness?
Well, I actually do think that. I think that, for example, substance abuse is a gigantic problem, but you could trace it in many people to the fact that they feel so lonely that they turn to something they can totally control, like a substance, and they get addicted to it because they're essentially dying of loneliness. And so that's one whole category of diagnoses. Anxiety and depression are both heightened when people feel lonely over time. Now, there are certain illnesses like bipolar illness or schizophrenia, which are not, or Alzheimer's, not explainable in that way at all.
Right.
But for some of the huge numbers of people on antidepressants or anxiety medication or using alcohol or pot to sort of medicate themselves, I think many of them are coping with loneliness.
Yeah. You also mentioned in there that you had seen, in your own practice, a rise in loneliness among your patients. In what ways did that trend manifest itself to you?
So the fabric of American life has kind of changed since technology took off. In the way back past, let's say 40 years ago, let's pick that, people by and large had to show up at work if they had a job. They couldn't stay home and work remotely. By and large, if somebody didn't come out of their house for 4 or 5 days, somebody would notice and go knock on their door and say, hey, is everything okay? But now if somebody doesn't come out of their house for 5 days, everybody assiduously doesn't pay any attention, and many other people are not coming out of their houses either, or right, their apartments. So there is a sort of change which could be characterized as everybody's so preoccupied with staying busy and being productive that they do not privilege socializing as very important. They are busy with self-care and health. They are busy with making money at a job. They are busy with contributing to society's betterment, supposedly. But they kind of forget to stay connected because that doesn't have an immediate, clear reward, except if you let yourself relax and have fun. And
right.
So to some extent, the emphasis on loneliness as an important health problem has been a boon, because it sort of reminds people, well, if you just consider that, you know, your seventh priority, it's just as dangerous for you as smoking cigarettes and never exercising.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very true, because the go-go-go mentality absolutely deprioritizes socialization.
Or just simple socializing, yeah.
let's talk a little bit about how the body responds to loneliness. I mean, things you've mentioned, like greater likeliness for substance abuse, a weakened immune system. How does not having important relationships in your life become a physical ailment?
Well, I will sort of go over a number of topics here that have
Please.
Turned up in the scientific community more recently. And one of the things we have come to appreciate is that when you love somebody and spend time with them, you can help them, as one researcher put it, balance their body budget, meaning that you can help them from not getting too anxious, help them keep from getting too anxious. You can help them calm down and relax. Essentially, being connected, comparing notes, spending time with people, touching and being touched, all of that is calming. It has a direct effect on the DNA at times, where different proteins are expressed on the cellular level, depending on whether you're with somebody or not. And so, for example, I think it was just Dr. Capciopo, who wrote also about loneliness and did research, that found out that on the cellular level, immune cells that created immunoprotective proteins declined in their functioning when people were lonely, or even said, I feel lonely. So you have a kind of direct effect all the way down to the cells on the immune system and what immune proteins are being released.
Wait, so just saying the words, I feel lonely, like...
Well, not if you just say the words because somebody says, you know, here's a sentence you should say.
Okay.
But if you answer, you know, if somebody is surveying you, trying to find out what your state of isolation is, and from their point of view, you live in a family and you aren't particularly socially isolated, but you say, even though I live in a family, I do feel lonely quite often. Then it turns out that when they measure your immune proteins in your blood, they will be lower than if you were a person who said, yes, I live in a family and we get along well and I love my family.
Wow.
So essentially, when you feel estranged from people you're around and feel lonely, even though you've got people around, that is a powerful effect on your immune system, just as being socially isolated and not having people around would have a powerful effect.
In some ways, it's probably self-explanatory, but I mean, what are the evolutionary reasons for why loneliness is so bad for us?
Well, probably our surviving in the protection of a small group is what allowed us to not just survive, but get to the top of the tree, so to speak. So that small group interaction and the fact that we had a small group who protected our back is what allowed us to survive. And therefore, even when in modern times people think, well, I don't really need a small group, look at me, I'm so self-sufficient, mm-hmm. you still have all the reflexes and the responses of a species that needs a small group.
Right. And we still have the same bodies, but it's a totally different environment.
Exactly.
You had spoken about how social isolation is not only an indicator for things like we've been talking about, substance abuse, early death, but you also suggested it's linked to greater consumption of consumer goods. Do you think that loneliness makes us more materialistic?
Yes, but I can't entirely tell which is the chicken, which is the egg, because I think the enormous emphasis on productivity at work and making money and the whole capitalist system of it's wonderful to accumulate things and be materially rich, I think that may have caused some people to retreat and become more isolated because they wanted so much to get ahead monetarily and otherwise. But when you are feeling lonely, just as having a glass of wine or four might cheer you up, you think that going to the store and buying a brand new something or other will cheer you up too. So it is a typical response to feeling I need something and I'm not sure what it is, but I'll shop around and see if I can find it in a store.
Hmm. And do things like people drinking glasses of wine or buying things, does that have even a temporary benefit?
Everybody who does it would say so, yes. I think that, you know, long before we had what is now called the epidemic of loneliness, people did enjoy a good glass of wine. And in fact, if you study the blue zones, which are the places in the world where people live longer than everybody else, oftentimes everybody goes to their local cafe and has a glass of wine in the middle of the day, and that's considered rather good for people. So alcohol per se is not terrible, and it can be great if it sort of facilitates social connection. But when it substitutes for social connection, it's a problem.
I had read, this was in one of the Malcolm Gladwell books, where he's talking about this Italian town in the United
right.
States.
Oh, Rosetto.
Yes. Okay, so you're familiar
with
it.
I love the Rosetto study.
Yes. Could you talk a little bit about that? What does that show us about the value of loneliness in terms of health?
Well, that Rosetto study is a study that people like me just love talking about. Essentially, what happened was that you had people from a small town in Italy immigrating to America, emigrating from Italy and immigrating to America, and they tried to imitate their small town in Italy in Pennsylvania. I think it was Rosetto, Pennsylvania. And essentially, even though the houses might have been more American than Italian, the family formations of people living in three-deckers and living with their grandparents and their aunts and uncles close by was true in Rosetto. And everybody felt, according to the study, everybody felt quite comfortable being in each other's houses, and everybody knew who each other was. It was sort of small-town life raised to the power of 10. Small-town life in Italian style. And a cardiologist who was doing some public health survey came to this town and was blown away by how healthy everybody's heart was, even in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, compared to a typical American town. And this was an American town, but it was a very Italian-like American town, and in fact had been recreated to be like an Italian town. And so he studied all these people and tried to correct for the water supply and the, you know, how they ate, and was it because of eating lots of pasta? And even when you corrected for all those factors, it seemed that for reasons that were a little obscure, everyone was healthier in their cardiac system. And then these same scientists predicted that as the young people started to move out of the town, that they would start having cardiac situations that looked much more like the rest of America. And so they followed some of these young people who moved to more Americanized towns that were less, where everybody knew each other and knew each other's family. And that exactly happened. The cardiac status got worse. People had arteriosclerosis much younger. They did not have the protective effect of the social connection that had existed in Rosetto.
Yeah, and they describe life in Rosetto. It's not like these people were practicing the healthiest lifestyles in terms of, you know, their diet or, you know, exercising all the time.
Right.
There is, it's interesting, because there is a huge industry devoted towards health, ostensibly.
Right.
And it emphasizes, you know, exercise, and it almost seems to fit into that sort of go-go-go mentality you were talking about. Why do you think loneliness is not, you know, we don't see public health ads about it? Why is that?
Well, I think we're starting to, but I think loneliness, so what I would say about America is that the people who came to America even 100 years ago had to be tiebreakers. They had to essentially leave the old country and their relatives to start someplace new. So there came to be a whole culture based on, we don't need people so much as we did in the old country. We are independent and individual and rugged and strong, and we like to pretend that we could manage just fine on our own, and we don't mind solitude. Now, that's an exaggeration, but if you think about the Westerns, it's not crazy exaggeration.
Right.
And that culture has affected us all. And the way you can tell is that if you live in Europe for a while, you know, people borrow things, and they're starting to follow in our footsteps. But there was a greater comfort with asking favors and borrowing things and being interconnected. And in America, everybody tries so hard never to ask favors, which isn't to say that they don't respond well if somebody asks a favor of them. But the culture drives us to act super independent and try not to ask favors. And especially as we grow more prosperous, that is sort of a sign of our growing prosperity, that we would never impose on anybody. We would figure out a way to do it all by ourselves.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So that American quality, I think, has led us down a bad path.
I think you're probably right, because there is a huge strain of individualism in this country, and that can often manifest itself in ways that are very anti-society. Do you think that a phenomenon like school shootings has anything to do with this? I mean, a lot of those kids who do those things seem to be socially withdrawn and hate the world and isolated.
I do think that. I do think that. I guess we have an odd situation here, because everybody can see what everybody else is doing on Facebook and Instagram, but they don't necessarily feel part of it, and they don't feel that they have a life as good as what they're seeing on Facebook and Instagram. So essentially, you have a whole population of people who don't just feel lonely. They feel specifically left out or missing, like fear of missing out. And that phenomenon makes them even more hostile and angry. It's bad enough that they feel lonely, but now they think, okay, you know, everyone else is having fun but me.
Right.
And that can lead to rage.
That that phenomenon of missing out, and there's, you know, there's acronyms invented about it, FOMO, fear of missing
right.
out. And you published this book back in 2009, when social media had been invented, but perhaps it was not as ubiquitous as it is now.
Yeah.
Do things like Twitter and Facebook, do you think they add new...
An extra aggravation to somebody who's lonely?
Yes.
Absolutely, I do. And you see it sort of most clearly with teenagers, who feel so aggrieved when they see that other people are having a party but not inviting them. It's, you know, very hard on a teenager to know about the fun people might be having without them.
Yeah. Yeah, you used to not be able to do that, but now if somebody's having fun,
you've got to hear about it.
You got to hear about that, and they curate the parts of their lives that are fun, so you don't see all the rest of it.
Exactly. And it's really, I think, terribly hard for teenagers who, by and large, spend 2 hours of their day scrolling through to see what everybody else is doing and to find out that everybody else might be doing things without them.
Yeah, that... You've mentioned the political environment that kind of helps produce this. There's a quote from Margaret Thatcher where she said, and in some ways this describes a lot of the politics of the past 30 years, she said, there is no such thing as society. There are individuals and family units. How much of this loneliness epidemic is a consequence of policy choices?
That's such a good question. I think I would have said it was much more a response to a kind of cultural stance we all feel, which is that we shouldn't have to ask favors. We should be included and we should, bestow favors, but we shouldn't have to reach out and admit that we're dependent on other people and seeing them. And I often use an analogy that's extremely different from that. Because when I see people who are feeling isolated and they don't know why, I use this kind of silly analogy. I say, you know, we're all like signal towers or beacon towers. And everybody's kind of surveying this around to see who's giving off signals that they're liked. So if I'm sitting at home and three people call over a weekend to say something, I sort of feel like, oh, these people still feel connected with me and they like me, and I consider that to be signals from their signal towers that I still matter. But if I don't hear anything from somebody's signal tower for 6 months, I think, okay, they've moved on, I don't matter. And everybody's doing that same kind of calculation. So if you're a person who is terrified of imposing or feeling needy, and you don't want anyone to know that you actually are dying of loneliness, and you don't give out any signals that you like anybody, you are going to be left out over time. Because the other people looking around are going to say, oh, well, so-and-so hasn't signaled me in, you know, months. I guess I don't matter. So why would I include them?
Wow. That almost describes sort of a feedback loop of loneliness. You feel lonely.
Exactly. I think that is so important because most of the lonely people never consider that they have done something or not done something that has contributed. And it's a sort of subtle thing. But once you use that signal tower analogy, sometimes people say, oh, yeah, I never call people because I don't want them to know that I have nothing to do.
Right. Or you don't want them to say, oh, I'm busy, I can't hang out.
Right.
There's been, the U.S., I believe, is the only developed country with a declining mortality rate due to...
Just now it started for the first time in 4 years, I think it... After being a declining length span, longevity level, it suddenly did a U-turn just that they put out the statistics this week and said for the first time it's going the other direction. So that's good news.
Well, why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, I think all of this publicizing about loneliness and all this publicizing about the fact that it does matter in terms of longevity, my hope is that that has made a difference. But I also think that we happen to be at a moderately prosperous time. So maybe people are dying of, you know, or living a little longer because they're not so stressed out about standard of living and having a job. Our unemployment rate is at an all-time low.
Right.
So even though I might personally have my problems with our president, I have to admit economically we are doing okay. Not great, but okay.
And good enough at least to maybe...
Maybe make a little blip so that we're not going down. I think when people really stop taking care of themselves, it represents a kind of despair. And I think you mentioned the word deaths of despair.
Right.
And maybe there's a few less deaths of despair as people can have jobs and a sense of purpose. I think a sense of purpose is as important as feeling connected. And without a job, it's hard sometimes to have a great sense of purpose.
Right, without a job, and there are a great deal of older people in this country who are either retired or they're divorced. Do you think that loneliness is something that particularly affects older people, or does it
It's
have the
much
same?
more true amongst the 20-year-olds, actually.
Oh, really?
The people over 65 do not seem to be quite as lonely. That doesn't mean there isn't a big percentage of them who do if they lost their partner or they don't have their job anymore. But it's odd that the over 65 set does not seem nearly as lonely as the something like 18 through 28-year-olds.
Why do you think that is?
Here's my theory. That when you're living with your family of origin before you're 18, you don't much think about whether you're lonely. You just think, this is my family. So and so takes care of me, and I live with them, and they are my caretaker or parent, and I love them. And then you go off into a world of your own, and you think, well, surely I'll, make my own family, and I'll have a new family quite soon. But usually during that decade, between 18 and 28, there's no actual guarantee that you ever will find a partner and start a family or have anything that compared with what you came from. Now, for some people, that would be a great thing because they may hate their families or what they came from. But for plenty of people, it's kind of floating in limbo and not knowing whether it'll ever work out. And you don't know if your career will work out. You don't know if your love life will work out. You don't know if you'll ever have a kind of stable family unit where you can live in one place and get to know friends. And so all of that is up in the air, and it makes people feel terrible.
That the uncertainty is
Yeah.
real.
Yeah. How old are you, by the way?
I am 24.
Well, do you find that to be true?
I think it's. I mean, yeah. I think that's certainly the case because people.
If it's not true for you, do you find it true for your,
Yes,
cohort?
for my cohorts, I would say so. There's. I find people who are older and more established and, have families, do not have that same kind of stress
Yeah.
about that uncertainty. And that,
And it's a big uncertainty.
yes.
None of us, before we had any of those things, thought it would ever work out. People can tell you till they're blue in the face, of course it'll work out for you. But you never know for sure.
What happens to people, let's say, who don't get married? Do those people tend to be more lonely, or is that just a perception that people have?
Well, there are plenty of people who don't get married but have a partner anyway and just don't bother with the marriage part.
Sure. Yeah.
But for people who live alone, and there are more and more of them, it is much harder to form a lively social life. But some people are kind of gifted at it. You probably are, because you're so good at talking to people. And I have some single friends who are just superb at it, and they are able to survive pretty well even though they live on their own. But by and large, if you live on your own, you have to work much harder to make a social web and have a sense of connectedness than you do if you live with people.
I see. So it is possible, but
It is
it's you have
possible,
to
but
put in the
it's
work.
not probable.
Oh, not probable. Okay.
Well, maybe that's putting it too strongly. You have to have superb social skills to make a social network as a single person that is as well connected and lively as a family.
We're almost at a half hour here, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. But one of the questions I did want to ask is, and you alluded to this at the beginning of our conversation, loneliness is one of those issues where it's almost embarrassing for people to ask for help. I remember I was on a plane one time and I was reading a book about loneliness, and I kind of when I went up to use the bathroom, I kind of turned the cover over because I just on a subconscious level didn't want to project the word loneliness to people.
Right.
What are some of the things that people can do to make themselves feel less lonely?
Well, I have to say, when I make these suggestions, they sound sort of pathetic and not very novel and interesting.
Sure.
But it turns out that if you pursue something that you like already and you do it regularly, and it can be singing in a choir, or it can be, playing bridge. It can be, you know, making go-karts. It can be going on bird counting expeditions. It can be anything. But if you do it regularly with a group of people who are also interested, then over time you will make friends, and probably quite good friends. But it needs to be sort of set up so that it's some sort of regular contact and there is some kind of joint mission. And so even though that sounds essentially so Mickey Mouse, you know, join a club and keep going, the fact is that you have to have some regular way of meeting with people, and it has to be something that would sustain you even if you never made a friend, because you would enjoy the topic so much.
I see. Well, on that note, Dr. Jacqueline Olds, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you.
Thank you to Jacqueline Olds, and thanks for listening to Dunk Tank. I'm Duncan Gammy. See you next time.